So, this is Jane Latour interviewing Bruni Hernandez on Saturday, March 19th, 2005. And Bruni... So, Bruni, tell me about where you were born and when. And
I was born March 14th, 1959, in the Lower East Side of Manhattan, New York. I was born on Henry Street. I think I was born on Henry Street in Gouverneur Hospital, which is not existing anymore where it used to be.
Okay.
That was a cool little one.
Okay, and your parents, where were they from?
My parents are from Puerto Rico. My mom came over to the mainland when she was 14 years old. And my dad came over, I think, when he was 18.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of work did your folks do?
My dad worked, when we were youngsters, he worked in the Tootsie Roll factory, which mm-hmm. I believe it's not any longer in New Jersey, I'm not mm-hmm. sure. And which was cool because he used to bring Tootsie Rolls mm-hmm. home, mm-hmm. so that was cool. And then my mom worked in the garment district, in the factories.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and
she was a seamstress.
And was she in the union?
She was in the union. She's mm-hmm. a very pro-union worker.
So that would have been the ILG?
Yeah. International Ladies
Garment.
Yeah. 1199, I think, right? 1199?
I don't know.
I can't remember.
And now, what about your dad? Was he a union member?
I'm not sure. Because okay. when they moved, when the Tootsie Roll Company moved, he lost his job. Oh. So I don't know mm-hmm. if it was union or not. Mm-hmm.
What did he do after that?
After that, he worked in... somewhere on the Bowery Street, unloading trucks and stuff for a packaging company.
Uh-huh. Hard labor.
Yeah.
Tell me about your education before you went into the electrical apprentice program.
I had finished high school in 1977, uh-huh. and in 77, I guess September of 77 to the first semester I went to college. I went to Marymount Manhattan College straight from high school, and I was kind of in that little, you know, how I don't need to go to school, I'm going to hang out and stuff like that. So I quit school the first semester. I just did one semester of college. And that was in spring of 78. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I hung out. I didn't, I wasn't in school. I was looking for work, things like that. And at that point, my mom and I were in a struggle. Mom, daughter kind of thing. I left the house and I moved in with Evan.
Oh. And where did you and Evan live?
We lived on Hudson Street. And she lived right near the little Jewish temple that was there on Hudson Street. I'm not sure if it's still there.
I don't know.
Across the street from Cats. Remember Cats?
Mm-hmm.
I love Cats. Cats is...
Delicatessen.
Yeah. They have great pastrami mm-hmm. and french fries. So we lived there. So I lived there with her. And after several months, I needed to look for a job. And so what we did was we found this... recruiting and training program for young adults who they would train people for interviewing mm-hmm. and looking for work and stuff like that. And
where was that located?
That one was located, I think it was on 125th Street in Harlem,
okay.
I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we went there, and the gentleman that was training us, we were doing, like, I guess it was like math training and interviewing and stuff like that. He said, well, Local 3, the IBEW, has opened up to women. Why don't you two, because I think there was the two of us, try to go into the electrical union? And we're like, you know, I had never thought of being in construction or being in any trades or anything like that. I mean, I used to like looking through the peepholes in construction, but that was as far as I got close to even thinking about it. So, so Evan and I said, yeah, okay. So we got trained manual dexterity and all that math and stuff. And the union had just opened us. That was 1978.
That's when they opened for
two women. And so we were training in 78, 79. We went in stood in line. It was so funny. I think they had like 500 jobs they wanted to fill with apprentices. But they were like, I think they were like 1,500 applications or something like that. So Evan and I were number 300 and 301. Something like that. We were there. And the way they used to do it, and you know the IBEW is in Queens, Flushing, Queens. They would line up all these young people outside to go in and get the applications. And we slept, we lined up the night before because we knew that there was just that amount open. And we knew there were going to be a lot of people.
So were there a lot of people camping out?
We all camped out overnight. I mean, some of the guys were playing football and stuff. It poured that night. It rained that night. And so Evan and I were there, and the next morning we got in. You know, we got up and got the application and stuff like that.
And so then they called you? They wrote to you? You had to go for an interview?
We had to go for an interview, which was so intimidating. It was like, I think I had like four or five men in a round table interviewing. So.
And were they kind of, what's a nice girl like you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Why do you want to be an electrician, being a woman? And,
and it's going to be hard.
And
what
it's
going to
be
of
hard. You know, do you have the strength? You know, do you think you could do it? Yeah. So things like that.
And so then you got notification in the mail that you...
Yeah, we had to take a test. We had to go through the interview, take a test, and then we got a notice that we were accepted.
And the test was math?
It was math.
Yeah.
I guess math and analytical stuff, I guess. I'm not sure. Yeah. I can't remember.
And so then you show up for your apprentice program.
Yes. So then we show up, and I don't know how they do it now, but the apprenticeship is... You do 4 years of apprenticeship, and then you do 18 months of like a mid-mechanic kind of journeyman. And then after you do those, and each time you move up, you have to take a test. And then you become an A journeyman, A journeyman wireman.
And so you were going to school and working. So tell me about the school part first.
The school part. The school part was that the electrical union was in cooperation with the labor studies, Empire State University,
Empire State College.
They would accept the apprentices from the union to get degree, an associate's degree in labor studies. So we have to go to school two nights a week.
And you were also studying electrical stuff in the classroom, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We would be studying theory. Mm-hmm. We would be studying unions. We would be studying about, you know, electrical formulas, mm-hmm. and anything that had to do with electricity and stuff, and the labor movement.
And how did you find the instructors taking to having females in the classroom and responsive in terms of education and teaching?
I liked my instructors. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any problems in class. I think we did an hour and a half or 2 hours, and I can't remember.
And so what about the work part? You had to, your first job?
Well, my first job was, I will never forget, City College of New York. They were doing their first wing, and that was up in Columbia,
135th Street, around there, Compton Avenue.
That was my first job. Mm-hmm. And you know, you come in with your nice, brand new, shiny toolbox, mm-hmm. with all your tools and stuff, and you give in your little pink slip, kind of, you know, that you're showing up to work. And the first thing I get all these stares from these guys just sitting around. It was really nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. I was so nervous. So it's a huge building. Mm-hmm.
And so hundreds of men?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And what were they building? Do you remember the building?
I think it was the West Wing, and this was in 79, mm-hmm. for the school.
Yeah. So how did that go? I mean, what were your experiences like at work?
Pretty much the first 6 months were, you know, getting to know how things work around male-dominated construction and a single woman on the job with all these guys around. And it was hard. I mean, it was like you would get, you know, remarks and, what are you doing here? Why aren't you here? Why aren't you taking the place of a man? Mm-hmm. You're taking the place of, you know, a husband? And, mm-hmm. why aren't you home? Things like that.
Yeah. And what would be, was there harassment or any kind of withholding of information or skill? Or?
There wasn't withholding of skills. Mm-hmm. The fortunate part was some of the mechanics that I worked with were, they didn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, you were there, you were helping, you were working. You know, others were not very helpful. Like, they would not help at all. And they wouldn't, you know, they didn't really want to work with women and stuff. And, you know, for the first 6 months I went in and I was nice and timid and thank you and mm-hmm. da da da. After 6 months I was just cursing up a storm just like mm-hmm. the guys. Mm-hmm.
And that wasn't like you, that was new behavior?
That was new behavior. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the first 6 months really, like, every day you became a little more like, oh my God, I really have to stand up for myself because most of these guys don't want me here, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, that's what I was thinking, mm-hmm. especially from the comments. Mm-hmm. And you know, after that, it was like, I'm going to be here. This is what I want to do. I want to learn this trade, and I'm going to do it, you know, and whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. I'm here, mm-hmm. and you'll have to deal with it.
And when did you discover that you liked the work?
I liked it right away.
Right away.
Oh,
what
yeah.
did you like about it?
It was working with your hands. It was using, you know, your brain. I mean, mm-hmm. you were doing these formulas, and you were figuring out how electricity worked, and, you know, how to hook up panels, how to, you know, just how it all worked, how motors worked, how it was something totally not
anything I ever thought I would be doing, so.
It must have been a fast learning curve, right? I mean, you were learning a lot.
You were learning a lot, mm-hmm. and you really did have to learn. And you know, with electrical, with electricity, I should say, one of the guys told me you really need to respect it.
Mm-hmm.
It can kill you.
Because
if you don't respect it, it's going to kill you.
What about overcoming? Did you have any fear when you started working with electricity? Because it is powerful.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
How do you deal with that? You just
make sure the circuit is off, and that you're putting the right wires where they go.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is gonna blow if you really pay attention. And you know, I mean, I've had several times where I got a nice little shock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, oops,
yeah.
That was on, or oops. Those wires need to be crossed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Yeah. So you started standing up for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, the first job after the 6 months, I really had this mechanic who was a bastard.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was not a very nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he really did not want women in the trade. And the thing with being the first woman in the job, there were no changing facilities, there were no toilets or bathrooms or anything like that prepared for women coming into the trade. So every job that you went on, you had to make sure that there was a toilet and there was a changing facility. And that was a struggle for a long time. That was a struggle. Where's our changing room? Where is the bathroom that we're going to use? You know, you're required to now to be, you know, open to that, you know. Eventually, you're going to have at least one woman coming to your job. So you're going to have at least a place where, you know, they could change.
Right.
So at this job, what they did...
What job? Do you remember what job it was?
Well, I'm talking about the first job.
The still one. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is the job that started me out, you know, on the road to becoming a journeyman. What they had was the toilets were enclosed in plywood and they were lined up.
Mm-hmm.
So what they did was at the end of one,
mm-hmm.
I think there were probably like eight.
Mm-hmm.
So
they
at the end of it, they put a plywood in, they just slapped the plywood
mm-hmm.
up
mm-hmm.
in the middle, and that was my toilet.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, that was my changing facility.
Okay.
So I didn't have a trailer
mm-hmm.
or a room.
Mm-hmm.
That was it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my little home,
mm-hmm.
a toilet closet. It was kind of like a closet. And the thing with this guy was, you know, since he didn't really like Plus, he was a drunk, so I was kind of afraid, and no, they wouldn't change me.
Mm-hmm.
So you were working with him. He was my mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
So after lunch, he would be, you know,
in
he
the
would
sauce.
Smell it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he would get more abusive.
And Italian guys, and this was my experience then. They might have changed,
mm-hmm.
but they are really verbally abusive,
mm-hmm.
And he was one.
Mm-hmm.
Verbally abusive with just foul language and stuff, and you know. So the experience that I had was, since he really didn't like me, you know, there was this one Thursday that I had to go to school.
Mm-hmm.
What he did, this was his joke, was he took the cinder blocks, you know, the cinder blocks, the 12-inch cinder blocks,
uh-huh.
the big ones.
Right.
He took cinder blocks and put them in front of the door to my
mm-hmm.
toilet changing facility. And I was getting ready to go to school, so I had to go and, you know. So I'm like, oh, man, this is, you know,
yeah.
this sucks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw all the cinder blocks down, got in, changed, and, you know, just went my way and didn't even confront it. And I sort of knew who it was.
Yeah.
Friday comes. Now Friday, you want to be out of there. No. We're there at 3 o'clock, you're out of there. Mm-hmm. You know, you're there from 7 to 3. And you want to go home, it's Friday. Well, he did the same thing, and Friday he gets really plastered.
Mm-hmm. So he fills up the front, he covers the front of the door, it's time, you know, it's time to go. And I was so angry. And this was the first time I ever let my anger get the best of me,
mm-hmm.
because it's not really good, especially when you're a situation like this.
Mm-hmm.
I was so angry, I knocked it down, and we used to have these gang boxes, I don't know what you know,
mm-hmm.
again, that's where we have all the tools and stuff, and I was so angry, I took a 2x4, and I put it under this gang box and just flipped the whole thing over, and it rolled over, and the tools got all messed up. There was a little oil in his tools. He was so particular. Got a little oil, and they got a little messed up. And so anyway, so he threatened. He was threatening me and stuff like that. And we were like in a circle. It was like,
and other people like, were just watching.
Yeah, all the guys circled us, and he was like, cursing you, son of a bitch, you come, who the hell you think you are, you don't belong here, blah, 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 and I'm like, I was so scared, and I'm like, how stupid can I be to just let this man get the best of me, and he was like, I mean, he was like 2 inches from my face with his finger, and you
and
this,
strong,
and
you're
you
very
that,
slightly
and,
built.
Well, I mean, I was, what, 19 maybe?
Yeah.
Skinny. I was skinny, 5'5", and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be killed.
Mm.
I was so scared. And it was that bad. I mean, it got that close. And there was this guy, he was like a Jamaican guy, Hector. I will never forget him. He said, don't worry, Bruni, I had your back. And you know, he had a knife. He had pulled a knife.
Mm.
And he had his knife, like, you know, down by his leg, and he said, if that son of a bitch touched you, I was gonna get him. You know, so I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe I think that I could. No, he's stupid, you know, you just.
But you knew that you had to stand up to him, or else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was it. And from that moment on, we never talked to each other. We never. He was not my mechanic anymore.
It was.
After that, pretty much, people on that job just kind of left me alone. And I got good mechanics after that. And they were just teaching me. And you know, working in colleges and schools and stuff, you have huge panels because you have to have transformers and so it was huge, and I was just learning a lot after that and stuff. And as an apprentice, you're on the job for at least a year, maybe a year and a couple of months, and they have to switch you.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to show you different types of work and move you around and stuff like that. So after my year was up, I was so glad.
Mm-hmm.
You get the pink slip, you out of there.
And
go
where'd you go then?
Round.
Do you remember?
No, I can't. Mm-hmm. Oh, after that, I went to Battery City Parks. Yeah.
And how many, there weren't any women there? There were? What was the situation?
At Battery City Park?
Mm-hmm.
I was the only woman in City College.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, at Battery City, it ended up, Evan was working there. It ended up, Evan was working there, and Laura.
Mm-hmm. Laura Kelvin.
Yeah. So that was kind of nice.
So you had a shanty together?
They had a shanty
mm-hmm.
for us. We had a changing place. We had, you know,
a bathroom,
mm-hmm. or not a bathroom. It was more of a porta-john,
because
it was new and new, totally new construction. Mm-hmm. It was in the whole lot and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. Although it was big.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Battery City Park, I don't know. You know, it's huge.
I worked near it. Yeah.
And having those first three buildings up there was huge. So we only saw each other maybe at lunch,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that. So,
but
it was good. It was kind of good support. We would like end up, you know, at the elevator or something. It was a tough job. I mean, it was like things are big. I mean, there was no
small shoe boot size and small like rain gears. So you had these huge rain gears. Especially if you're, you know, small.
Yeah.
You had these rain gears that were big, and then you had these boots that were.
Yeah, Evan also.
Yeah, exactly. Sloshing around because you had to go for coffee, and so you had to go in the mud, in the rain, in the snow, whatever.
So
it didn't matter.
Was that the first building they were putting up there, or the first three they were putting
those were
all
the first
together.
Three. Yeah, that was Battery City Park. Uh-huh. They were the first three buildings uh-huh. that went up.
And how long were you on there?
I was there. I think I was there for a year and a couple of months. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your graduation from your apprenticeship. Did you have a ceremony?
You know, what was funny with the college graduation, mm-hmm. we had our ceremony at Columbia, I think it was. And it was terrible. What was funny with that was that once all the apprentices were called up to get their diploma and stuff, it was a very hot, sticky. I mean, they didn't have air conditioning on. There was these huge fans going. So people were getting agitated because of the heat and stuff. What happened, which was, I mean, I walked out with all the apprentices. I walked out with them. And I looked back and half of the audience was gone, which was kind of, when I looked back, I'm like, oh, that was a bad move. Mm-hmm. But it was just too hot.
Were your folks there? Had you had a
my dad. I think my dad went there mm-hmm. and stuff. So that was kind of nice. But
and then the so you finished your apprenticeship and they just get your card in the mail or something? Don't they have a ceremony?
Mm-hmm.
No ceremony.
That's it. So what we did was we had a little party.
Mm-hmm.
All the women that got their A card, mm-hmm. after all of them got their A card, we
dressed
did the
up.
Party, like that picture uh-huh. you saw, that was the party.
Uh-huh.
We all
and where did you
and
have the party?
It was I think it was a restaurant that we went to.
Marty said there's a restaurant on 23rd Street that you really used to like.
Yeah, there was one there, and then this one was, I think, in the village somewhere,
uh-huh.
and we did that.
Uh-huh.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So, did you participate with Women Electricians, the group of Cynthia Lauren? Did you do some work with that?
We did. I started with them in the beginning, and basically our concerns were, of course, changing facilities, bathroom facilities mm-hmm. for women on all the jobs.
Right.
Because now here you have women coming in, and as a union, we expected, you know, to get support for these things. So that's what we were working for. Excuse me. And so, you know, eventually, after several years, we did get
mm-hmm.
We did get that. It was hard. It was, you know, and one of the things, the other thing that we were trying to work for was we had a union meeting, so we had to go. As apprentices, we had to go and stuff like that. Was when whoever was at the head of the meeting would address
mm-hmm.
the apprentices and the journeymen,
mm-hmm.
but they would address the brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
That took a long time. I mean, I don't know if they do it now, but there were some of our so-called leaders that just did not really want that. And they kept, oh, brothers, so here we are in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we kept that, sisters! And sisters! And so that was one thing
mm-hmm.
that we worked on. And, you know, Cynthia really and Evan were really working on that a lot. Yeah, so
tell me about other events with tradeswomen. Did you participate with United Tradeswomen at all, or go to events or forums? I know they had a lot of forums. They had some demonstrations.
Yeah, I would go to some of the demonstrations
mm-hmm.
and stuff. In the beginning, I did a lot. Then I just dwindled off.
Because of why?
Because you get tired, mm-hmm. you know, and I was getting tired, and I'm like, you know, we're fighting for the same thing year after year after year. And I have to give credit to women like Cynthia who keep going at it year after year after year. I mean, she really hung in there. She had a lot of, like all of us, a lot of harassment and stuff. But she kept going, and, you know, she became, you know, more and more involved in the union. So that was good. You know, I don't know, I didn't have that kind of energy. Mm-hmm. You know, I would go, I would...
So, Bruni, were you at the Pots and Pans demonstration? I think it was at AT&T. So, Pots and Pans. Were you there?
No.
No? You don't remember that?
No,
okay.
I don't.
Oh, yeah. Okay. But you did go to demonstrations.
I did go to demonstrations, yeah.
So, now, did things change after you got your journey card, your A card, in terms of the treatment? Or
actually, I think things changed before then. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I started the apprenticeship in 79. Mm-hmm. I think by the time I was entering probably my fourth, fifth year, it was getting a little better.
Mm-hmm.
More men were more responsive and willing to work with you, mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And you still had the few guys that really didn't want you on the job and stuff. But I think more and more we're accepting the fact that, you know, women were going to come into the trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would say that even before I got my journeyman card, I was being respected a little more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once you pass your internship, apprenticeship at the fourth level, and you're going into mid-mechanic, you know, people are like, okay, this person, you know, probably knows something,
yeah.
You know, and give you more elbow room to work. And from early on, I really liked working by myself, you know. And I would say, hey, give me that, and give me this, and
don't
you know,
you
give me the plan.
Don't you usually work
in pairs? Yeah, you usually work in pairs. So I would tell the mechanics, hey, why don't I go do that? You know, why don't I go set up the paddle, and you go, you know, do whatever. Because I really liked running pipe. I really enjoyed running
and
pipe and doing
pipe. And tell me what you like about that.
Pipe work?
Explain what pipe work is for, like, for those of us who don't know what's behind the wall.
Right.
What is it?
Well, most pipe work that you do is mostly for, like, commercial, like, schools, for instance, mm-hmm. because a lot of the pipe work is going to be exposed. Inside the walls, you know, when you're running studs and stuff like that, most of the things inside the wall are, and it really depends on what it is, if it's commercial, if it's school, if it's
mm-hmm.
Residential and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You have pipe work, you have Romex, you have BX and stuff like that. So it really depends on what type of work it is.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, for the pipe work that I did,
mm-hmm.
the schools, you had to run tubing, which is pipe. Tubing is a softer kind of pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the IMC, which is a stronger pipe and stuff like that. So you really use those for more for commercial kind of school kind of construction. And what I liked about running pipe mostly was when the pipe was going to be exposed, it was kind of concentric. It was like a concentric pipe run,
mm-hmm.
which means you really had to use your knowledge of the formulas and math and angles and, you know, 90 degree turns and elbows and offsets and things like that. Which meant when you look, like if you're looking at an industrial plant,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the pipes, you see they're all going nicely in the same way. There's nothing that's bumping out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's no, you know, when it bumps out in a nice 90 degree elbow or a 45 degree offset. And when you look at it, it's kind of like a river, you know, it just goes smooth and it's not, you know, everything just turns at the right time and, you know, it goes up at the right time and they're all going the same way. That's concentric pipe running. I love that because it was like you were looking at a painting or something that was just...
It sounds like artwork
right.
when you just...
It was really... Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you had to really learn your formulas
mm-hmm.
of how to make a 90-degree bend in a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you didn't know how to make a 90-degree bend in your pipe, then you were going to kink it. You can't run wires in that. Because
mm-hmm.
you have to make it where you're going to write... Once the pipe is in,
mm-hmm.
you're running your wires through those pipes. So you don't want to run, you don't want the wires to run hard. You want them to be smooth. One end to the other, everything goes through all nicely. Kinks and stuff, really, you don't want kinks. Yeah, it makes it hard. And when you look at it, you want to look at it like if it was your masterpiece. You know,
and
it's perfect, almost. So that's what I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked running pipes. And when you run a nice line of pipes, and people look up, they're like, oh yeah,
mm-hmm.
she knows what she's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good
feeling. Oh, look at those 90s, look at those offsets.
Mm-hmm.
Offsets go like this. Look at those 45s. You know, they're all running perfect. I mean, that's how I saw it.
Yeah.
You know, and you're, you know, hanging and measuring and using your level and, you know, make sure things are going in and coming out where they're supposed to. And you come up the wall and you go through the wall and
mm-hmm.
you want to make sure when you're going through the wall to the other room that you're, you know, where you're supposed to be and all that stuff. But I really enjoyed it. Panels, when you're working at a panel. You want to look at a panel and you're running your wires into the panel. You want the wires to look like they're a picture. You know, you're folding, you're bending the wires nice. They're going into your circuit breaker and it has all the shapes and you tie it up nicely. You know, I love that.
Yeah.
Especially when it was all brand new. It was all easy. It was all open for you. So you're like running and people leave you alone. You do a good job, you're doing your work, people leave you alone. When they look at what you're doing and how you're doing it, they leave you alone. Because it's like, oh, that's a good workmanship.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good work.
Respect.
Yeah, and that's like, you know, she knows what she's doing. Yeah, and they leave you alone. And then when I used to, when I was a mechanic, you would get plans, you get floor plans.
Mm-hmm.
I would just tell my foreman, give me the floor plan, I'll lay it out,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'll do it, just leave me alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go in and you lay out where your switch is going, where your outlet is going,
mm-hmm.
then you count the circuits, how many outlets and how many switches can go on one circuit,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, when you lay everything out, where the lights are going, where, you know,
mm-hmm.
all these things are going, you lay it all out. Which means your floor is set so that either you or the next person is going to come and run whatever wire, the
mm-hmm.
Romex or the BX or the pipes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they know that there's going to be an outlet there and, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's going to be an outlet 6 feet over there, there's going to be a light over there, and everything is set. So you lay it out. So you lay it out, the next person comes in and runs the wires, the walls go up, you don't see all of you're not going to see all the work until they went in it because you're only going to see the outlet.
Mm-hmm.
But you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So
tell me about What about, was there harassment on the job throughout the years? And what kind of coping strategies did you develop?
Yeah, there was harassment. There was like, you know, do you want to go out with me? Mm-hmm.
What about if you, in terms of race and...
You're Latina, you're loose, you're, you know, let's go, I'll get an apartment.
That was an assumption?
Oh, yeah.
Not on everybody's part, but...
You're easy, yeah. Mm-hmm. The guys that really wanted to, I mean, there was so much sexual harassment. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had foreman's like, you know what? I live in Long Island. I could get an apartment and we can, you know, hang out.
Apartment?
Yeah.
Wow. Serious.
Serious.
So what were your coping strategies for dealing with that?
After a while, I would just like, you know, you're such an idiot. Just leave me alone. You know, I'm not here for any of this, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, you would just kind of brush it off or curse him out or just, you know, tell them to go, you know, suck on our cigar or something, I don't know. And then you would talk to your fellow women electricians.
Yeah. And did the union ever provide any kind of support or, you know?
Not really. Not what I saw. They would always say, oh, yeah, we're working on it, you know.
Yeah.
Because you would tell them, hey, you know, there's no bathroom on this job. Mm-hmm. It would take a long time before, you know, they would come back and say, okay, we're going to get you a bathroom.
What about pornography?
Was
that an issue?
Oh, God, yes. Oh, my God, that was an issue. Mm-hmm. I mean... pornography was a way to harass the women on their job. And I really had a bad experience with that in where was I working? I think I was in Hunter College, something like that. There was this one guy who really, really could not stand women. I mean, he hated women. I mean, I think he hated women, period. Mm. But he did not like that women were coming into the trades to work. Mm-hmm. And he did not like me, you know. And at one point he told the shop steward, you know, is the person that is supposed to be our
advocate.
Right. I don't like any women working in this, and I will not work with women. So we didn't work together. But he would constantly, like what we used to have is on Mondays, we were supposed to have a safety meeting, which was one of the good things that happened with the union on jobs and stuff. You have a safety meeting every Monday. And the unfortunate part is the safety meetings was in the men's locker room. Mm. Yeah, that was unfortunate because we didn't have that. We had our own room to change in and stuff. So we would have to, you know, go to the men's locker room, which there was always some kind of Penthouse or you know, Hustle or some kind of magazine around, and it was fine if it was around and, you know, it was like turned over or whatever or hidden or whatever. But this one guy who had it in for me refused to let that be the case. And so he would plaster the walls with these naked pornography, you know, naked pictures of women and pornography and stuff like that. And I would tell the shop steward, I am not going to the meeting. I'm not going to expose myself to that. Yeah. You know, it's obvious that, you know, they have a problem with that, with me coming. So, you know, I'm not going to do it. So I would refuse to go to the meeting. And I would refuse to go into... And when you were an apprentice, you were supposed to, like, sweep up. Mm-hmm. I mean, we did all this crap work. Sweep the shanties or whatever, and sweep and stuff. And sometimes I would refuse. I said, look, I'm not going to do it. There's too much crap there. You know, I don't want to, you know, expose myself. Other times I would just, like, blow it off if it was, like, one or two, and I'm like, you know, and just look away or whatever. But this guy would plaster the walls with these pictures. And so the shop steward was like, you know, you got to let it, you need to take those pictures down because we can't have that, if, you know. And a lot of guys didn't like it. You know, a lot of the guys didn't like it, but they refused to do anything about it.
Yeah.
You know. So, you know, so he ripped it up, you know, ripped them down and stuff like that. But then he just kept doing it. Just then one day, there was naked pictures of women on all the walls of this shanty and the ceilings.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if he did it by himself. To this day, I'm like, he could not have done that by himself. You know, but all four walls and the ceiling were plastered like this. And he had them taken down, and he was sent to another job. Yeah, they weren't going to tolerate that, and which was nice. This shop steward was really for like a good working environment. It doesn't matter whether, you know, there were women on the job and stuff. He was going to have a good working environment because it made for better. It made for a better environment. Yeah. So he was sent. Mm-hmm. Eventually, he was sent to another job.
Good.
But yeah, there was always pictures and, you know, words and
drawings
and, you know, just crap like that that we had. And, you know, it went on, and every job was different.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to deal with it on most jobs that you went to. You had to deal with one or two people that, you know, didn't like you. And I think eventually it got better, but, you know, you still have them.
Mm-hmm. What about sources of support while you were going through this?
From?
Where did you get your support?
Well, it was mostly from the women, the other women. It was mostly from just us deciding that we were going to have meetings and we were going to decide, you know, who we're going to go to, who we're going to talk to, mm-hmm. and, you know, just getting together and just kvetching us in.
Mm-hmm.
God, I had this one guy, and da-da-da, mm-hmm. and watch out for this guy, and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of supported each other mm-hmm. in that way.
Women electricians.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And, so tell me about, tell me about the sources of satisfaction for being an electrician.
For me, I really liked it. I really got to enjoy being an electrician in that it was a trade. It was a trade that once I decided that I wasn't going to be in it mm-hmm. anymore, it was something I could just take with me. I will always have that. I will always be able to do it. You know, and I thought that was an asset, mm-hmm. was that it's something that you will always have. And you could go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You could go to any state, to any place, and mm-hmm. be an electrician, you know. You know, some places you would have to get licenses, other places in New York you don't have to have an individual license because it's part of the union, and contractors have to have their license mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But in places like here, for instance, Virginia, each individual electrician has to have a license and stuff like that. So, but other than that, you can take it with you anywhere. And like I said, it's so neat to wire up a room, everything is in,
mm-hmm.
and go to the panel and turn that switch on, and
like
there's light, and you did that. You know,
mm-hmm.
you know, you like it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a miracle.
Well, speaking of taking it anywhere, I know that you did some work in Nicaragua.
Yes.
Why don't you talk about that? When was that, and what brought you there? And
yeah, Nicaragua was in 1987 was when I went, August of 1987. And That was a little different because that was more of a political statement.
Mm-hmm.
It was during the war of Nicaragua, mm-hmm. and it was during the Iran-Contra war, I guess. We meaning the people involved with the New York Nicaragua Construction Brigade,
mm-hmm.
which is what the organization was, we didn't believe in what the United States was doing. And we didn't believe in that Nicaragua was being bombed in different places and schools were being, you know, torn down from or destructed or whatever. And so what we wanted to do was we wanted to go to Nicaragua and build some schools. Was the mission.
Mm-hmm. And was this all-women brigade or males and females?
Well, it started out as the New York Nicaragua Construction mm-hmm. Brigade was a men and women
mm-hmm.
Organization.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I got involved, they had a women's group,
mm-hmm.
and they had the co-ed
mm-hmm.
group, let's
yeah.
say it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And Evan was part of that,
mm-hmm.
and she was one of the kind of the leaders in
mm-hmm.
Getting this women's group to work. And there were other women in many different trades. Even if you didn't have a trade
uh-huh.
and you wanted to be in this organization, you could be in this organization. And they decided it would be easier to have a women's group go to Nicaragua and hire women. That's what we ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
This women's brigade went to Nicaragua,
mm-hmm.
to Condega, a little town out of, I think it was like half hour from Managua
mm-hmm.
or Esteli. And it would be easier for for the Nicaraguan women to work with us
mm-hmm.
because we were all women and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And in Nicaragua and in a lot of Latinos community culture, there's a really big thing of machismo,
mm-hmm.
like women are supposed to just be moms and, you know,
mm-hmm.
and housewives and, you know, take care of the kids. And although they do everything, I mean,
mm-hmm.
they do the gardening and they do the milking and the whatever that it takes in the different countries. So we hired eight, when we were there, we hired eight Nicaraguan women to work with us constructing
wow.
a school, which
and
was so cool.
And you had to teach them?
We had to teach them because
mm-hmm.
they didn't know
yeah.
about construction.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to teach them. Now, Evan was there in the beginning doing
mm-hmm.
all the, you know, red tape kind of preparation and stuff. And when I went in August, and they had already gone earlier in the year to figure out where we were going to stay, who we were going to stay with, what town we were going to work in, and stuff like that. So we ended up working in Condega, Nicaragua, which is a cute little town.
Mm-hmm.
And each woman would live with a family.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of neat. And like I said, I went in August of 87. I was only there, unfortunately, to dig out. Like, I was there, we were digging out, we surveyed, and we decided how big the area was going to be and stuff like that, and I was there digging, you know. And everything had to do by hand. And the kids and the way this little town was, because they didn't have schools, some kids would go to school in the morning and some would go in the afternoon. I think the young would go in the morning and the older children would go in the afternoon, or vice versa.
Yeah.
And those that were not in school would come once in a while, would come with machetes. That's
mm-hmm.
how we cleared the land, was with machetes, and help us clear the land. And I learned how to use a machete and stuff. It was a lot of fun. And the women would come out and, you know, work with us and stuff. And so I was there for 1 month.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there in the beginning, mud and
mm-hmm.
rain.
Did you ever have a chance to go back?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah, but they did build a school.
They did build a school, yeah. And My understanding is that after all that, after the building of the school, so mm-hmm. they did organize some of the women and developed a group of women there mm-hmm. that continued to do some kind of construction. That was my understanding.
Okay. So tell me about your decision-making process in terms of leaving the trades. How many years were you in, and then what made you decide to leave?
Yeah, I was in the trades for 10 years, mm-hmm. from 79 till 89. And part of the reason that I left was because I always wanted to be in the medical field. I mean, when I was young, I wanted to be a pediatrician. Mm-hmm. And when I started, each time I started college, it would be a pre-med student. Mm-hmm. Somehow, I don't know what happened. And so I was in a place where I did not want to retire in construction mm-hmm. because construction can be very draining mm-hmm. in the system, on your physical mm-hmm. being, mm-hmm. mentally and physically, and sometimes spiritually. And I did not want to be an old lady in the trades. And I wanted to really go back to school and get into some kind of medical, in the medical field. So I decided at 30 that I would retire from the union and go back to school. And that's what I did. In 89, I was accepted at Mount Holyoke College, and I went in as a pre-med student, and I did 2 years of pre-med, mm-hmm. which was like biology, chemistry, and all that. Totally got burned out, switched over to women's studies, mm-hmm. and what we were studying was global healthcare, mm-hmm. and women and children, mm-hmm. and that's where I stayed. Got my BA in Women's Studies. Mm-hmm. that was in 93, I graduated. And then my partner at the time was looking into graduate school in Texas, mm-hmm. Austin, Texas. She was accepted. And so I went ahead and went to Texas mm-hmm. with no plans. Mm-hmm. I graduated from college with mm-hmm. no plans at all. I didn't know what I was going to do after mm-hmm. graduating and stuff. And while I was in Texas in 95, I started going to school mm-hmm. to see if I could join the nursing. So I did 1 year of master's in nursing, and then I switched over to a bachelor's in nursing because I finished school faster. And so in 98, I got my RN license and was working as a nurse, mm-hmm. which I was happy, very happy mm-hmm. to be doing what I was doing.
And tell me about the kind of work you do now.
Now I am a public health nurse, mm-hmm. and I work for Arlington County Department of Human Services, and I love my job. And basically what a public health nurse in my position does is we have clinicals. So we have maternity clinic, family planning, immunization, child health clinic. And we have one nurse of the day office, which mm-hmm. is like a walk-in clinic, and anyone can come and ask questions and stuff. It's mostly women in maternal and child mm-hmm. health. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like half-time part of my time. And the other part, I do case management. And I follow families and whatever they need, and children, and you know, any kind of problem that comes up.
So you've switched from working in a basically all male environment to working with women.
Yes.
And how do you contrast your two careers? What What are your thoughts about that? That's probably a dumb question.
The women's one is more nurturing.
Surprise.
More nurturing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There is a big difference between male dominated work environment to a women dominated work environment. Big difference. And the difference is in nurturing, support. You know, you can cry on each other's shoulders if you have to, and that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. You know, mothering, caring, you know, sisterly love, and you know, all that kind of stuff. In the male environment, it is like you need to pull yourself
suck it up.
But yeah, suck it up, and you know, you need to take care of yourself, mm-hmm. and you need to do it. You need to be strong. You need to be, you know.
And men pay a big price for that.
Men pay a big price for that, unfortunately. And I saw guys that I worked with that I really liked, who were old, beyond their age. I mean, they were just, you know, hunched over. They were tired. Their hands, their, you know, their everything hurt, and they were always complaining about, you know. They were miserable, a lot of them, you know. And, you know, they would retire, and in 2 years they would die. You know, it was just...
So the satisfactions of your new career are...
I just love being a nurse. I love being a public health nurse and working in the community, which is what I do. And just meeting lots of different people. And because it's maternal and child, I meet a lot of different women from a lot of different countries. I mean, Ethiopia and Uganda and Mongolia and, you know, Korea and just Iran and Pakistan. I mean, it's just, you know, and then, you know, all South America, Central America. It's just unbelievable. And it's such a mixture of people. And it's just so rich.
And you must be doing a lot of education on your
Yes.
too, right?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. We do a lot of education. Mm-hmm. We, you know, we do a lot of health education, family planning, maternal mm-hmm. and child and parenting and domestic violence. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of domestic violence and things like that. And what we try to do, although it's maternal and child, when they do bring their male partners, mm-hmm. husbands, boyfriends, mm-hmm. whatever, we do try to educate the family in, you know, in whatever.
The importance of health care.
Yeah, the importance of health care, the importance of, you know, non-violent kind of, you know, learning each other and stuff like that. Kids and sex, sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, you know, all of those things we try to do. And then, of course, it's Arlington County, so I try to give them resources in Arlington County that they could either get from the Department of Human Services or other departments throughout Arlington. So it's really fun.
When you look back at your pioneering experience, I mentioned to you last time we spoke about, I read this wonderful book about the Brooklyn Dodgers, the Boys of Summer.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, they wrote about Jackie Robinson, and they said he bore the burdens of a pioneer and only made him stronger.
Mm.
And what do you think about that, being a pioneer, and what are your thoughts?
I never really thought of myself as a pioneer. There were so many people that came in before me. I mean, I just... And of course, one person, I feel really good that I was part of that first
five women, the group of five women, which was Cynthia, Melinda, Evan, Beth Goldman, and myself. And it was a scary thing to do. It was something unheard of, you know, especially in the electrical union. But I feel very fortunate and very honored to have been in that group of women and stuff. And you know, a lot of them did a lot for the women that came in after them. And so I feel fortunate to be part of that. But I think, like, Cynthia did a lot. You know, Evan did a lot. I mean, Evan, and I of course, I'm biased because Evan was my best friend. Mm-hmm. You know, and she was one hell of a woman.
What was special about Evan? You knew her a lot better than I ever did.
Yeah.
Tell me about
Evan. Well, we were friends since we were 17. Uh-huh. And we're 2 weeks apart in birthday.
Uh-huh.
Same year. So I was like, we kind of connected. And she was always involved in something good for the community. And involved in the Latino struggles, involved in women's struggle, period. And she just kept going and just, you know, always looking to fight against injustices for that were exploited and stuff. So she was always amazing. She was always there, like a pillar. Like she was kind of like a stronghold. Just kept going and just kept, you know, well, you know, we gotta do this. You know, I know it's hard, I know it's different, but you know, we have to do it, we gotta prepare. It was kind of like her, like what I saw in her was like, we need, even though we're going through this, and it is hard, and it is frustrating, and it is painful,
mm-hmm.
we need to do this so that other women coming before us,
mm-hmm.
Coming after us, will have a better experience. And that was really our attitude. We really need to go through this and just put up with it, you know, and correct the wrong. And because there's going to be other women coming, and you know, we just need to prepare it, kind of. And that's what it was. It was that kind of attitude. And she was always there. She really was, for the little short woman that she was,
yeah.
She had a lot of power in her being, and you know, what was fair, and the things that needed to be done, and she was there.
When we look at assessing affirmative action today, and the situation of women and children, and women's wages and things like that, what do you have to say about assessing the gains?
That it still sucks?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's always, you know, for the most part, women still make less than men, you know. Women and children still are not educated and don't have the resources to know, you know, about healthcare and know about things that they need for their family. Still, research is made mostly through men, you know, heart attacks, you know. The heart attack, the research that's out there is heart attacks in men, cancers, and you know, in men. So a lot of it's still men-oriented. There is, you know, a strive towards changing. You know, there's more research that's going towards women and children and stuff. But I think we still have a long way to go, unfortunately, in that arena. And and you still have presidents of colleges saying that women are not good in science and math, and I went to Mount Holyoke College, and I know that there are women who are excellent, so knowledgeable, and who are, mentors for women growing up. I mean, and I have to say, I went to a women's college. Mount Holyoke College is a women's college. It had really good professors, women professors, really, I mean, women in math and science, and Mount Holyoke is known for science. It was really great people. So somebody who's the president of a college saying that, women are still lacking in math and science, I don't know where he came from, You still have that kind of attitude. 2005, you still have that kind of attitude. It's unfortunate.
And what do you have to say about the importance of these good-paying jobs for women? I mean, there's still very few, like around 2% of women in construction, and in general, the blue-collar jobs are very, sparsely populated by females. But what do you have to say about it as a field for women?
I think women should get into it. I mean, I think it should be opened up more. I think women should be more welcomed more. I mean, I think sometimes women do a better job than men do in many different ways, it's unfortunate that, it's only 2%. I think women should get into high-paying jobs, especially in the jobs that are construction. Electrician. I like electrician. I think it was great. To me, it was much better than being a plumber, but, plumbing is needed.
Mm-hmm.
Electrical is needed. Working in, in the other trade, in duct. Working in
sheet metal,
mm-hmm.
right?
I mean, they're all needed.
Yeah.
I mean, without them,
what do you think it would take to change the work environment on construction sites? That's a big question.
That is a big question, and I think part of what it would take, what we've always been working for, is for fair and open work experience.
Mm-hmm.
It should not be that, oh my God, you're a woman, so you cannot lift a brick.
Or we're not going to hire you.
Or we're not going to hire you because you're going to be, you're not going to be able to lift that, or you're not going to do the job right. I think what needs to happen is, I think it needs to be open and it needs to be fair, and people need to say, okay, we'll hire you. Let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do, not every woman
mm-hmm.
can do it.
Right.
Not every woman can be a nurse.
Right.
Yeah. Not every woman can be an electrician.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it really, what I feel like is that there should be a way that people should let people decide for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to be able to go and be an electrician, then I should have the opportunity open to me for me to say, I'm going to try being an electrician. Why should I have somebody tell me, oh no, you can't come in? It should be open. It should be open, and people should be able to make that decision whether they can do it or not. There's a lot of people that can do a lot of different things. And there's a lot of women that can do a lot of different things. Just got to give them the opportunity to show it, to do it, and to be able to say, oh man, I can't do this. I'm going to go to something else. But give that woman the chance. Give that woman the opportunity to say, I'm an electrician. I can do this. I'm a nurse. I can do this. This is what I want to do. And let them do it. It's that opportunity needs
mm-hmm.
to be open. And in a lot of places, it's not.
Mm-hmm. Well, anything else you want to add? Other comments?
I think women should go into any profession, any trades, anything that they feel that they can do. I think they should be able to give. I think they should be able to be given that opportunity.
When you worked with a woman in Nicaragua, how was it to overcome their own internal psychological barriers to doing this kind of work and to doing something that was, I mean, what was that experience?
Oh,
that must have been an amazing experience.
That was amazing, you know why? Because they were like, oh my God, I never lifted a hammer. Mm-hmm. But here you are, and you're a woman, and I'm a woman, and you're going to show me how to do it, and I'm going to be able to try to do it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't, they were in a place where it was supportive, it was nurturing, it wasn't, she wasn't being put down if she couldn't lift the hammer or lift the bucket or whatever. She was being edged on to, if you want to lift that hammer and you want to build that wall and you want to, you know, mm-hmm. hammer that nail into that piece of stud, you can do it. And we're going to be right here. And if you can't do that, don't worry about it. There's another thing you can do. You know?
Yeah. And
but
did you
first,
see, did you see the growth in them? And the,
oh, my God. They loved it. They were so happy. You should have seen them. Oh, I never lifted a hammer before. Oh, I never nailed a nail before. It's like, okay, but you had 8 children. You milk the cows and you plant the seeds and you do that. That's hard labor.
Or I was reading recently about women in Africa with this woman who won
the
Nobel Peace
Prize
and having to carry these big buckets of water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The thing is, who am I to tell you, Jane, that you don't have the strength to do anything?
Or the brains.
Or the brains. I can't do that. You need to say, Bruni, let me try that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do that. And you know what? A lot of times, it's not muscle. Mm-hmm. It's not muscle strength that you need. People think it out. And a lot, and most women that I have worked with are probably not physically strong, but they think it out and they say, oh, I can lift that from there, but I could do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's much easier for me to do it this way. And they do it. They take it from that point A, they put it in point B. A guy would just come in and you know, just take it in. But who's gonna live longer? Probably the woman that used her brain to say, okay, I can move that, but I'm moving it this way where I'm not using every single muscle in my body. I'm using this muscle in my body or, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I can move it easily. You know, and the guy will come and he'll use the muscles and the bones and the things of his back.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, his back is going to go out. And who's going to be standing? The woman. Because she didn't have to use all of that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, and the women in Nicaragua, they were so happy. They just really wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, I'm going to show these guys I can do this. You know, they had a really good attitude. Like, you know, they can do it, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they would just pick up their belt and put it on, mm-hmm. take the hammers and just hammer, 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 hammer away. And just, you know, take the shovel and dig a hole and, you know, mark out what they needed to do, use their brains, use the math, use, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever it took. You just gotta give people a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of it. A lot of women do not have the chance to explore what they can or cannot do. And I think that's what that's the first women to go into the electrical union today. We showed IBEW, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, number 3, that women could become electricians. In more ways than one. You know, they become union organizers, they become shop stewards, they become, you know, leaders within the union. There's so many different ways.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thank you, Bernie.
You're welcome. You're welcome.